wake up. There's no sleeping in on Saturday. It's time for the Paul Santos Show on WBSM. Join Paul as he tackles local issues, current events, and fun conversations. Call 508-996-0500 or send Paul an app chat message on the WBSM app. Hey, hey, hey. Now, here's Paul Santos. What you
got to say? All right, back with hour number two. Welcome into the weekend. Hope you're having a good start to the weekend so far, even though we're not that far into it. A little cloudy today, but it's getting warmer. Tomorrow we'll be back up in the 70s again. Today will be in the 70s as well. We're happy to be joined on hour number two of the show here by the president of the LGBTQ Plus Network, and that is Andrew Pollock. Let's see if I've got the right microphone. Good morning.
Good morning, Paul.
Ah, that's you. Here you're there. Are. What's going on?
Hello. Nice to see you this foggy morning.
Yes, great to see you as well. I didn't realize that you were on Brian's show the other day, but that's okay. I'm sure you'll take another hour on the radio.
I'd be happy to do it, Paul.
Well, before we get into a lot of the stuff that we talked about in hour number one, this is Pride Month, a very important month to you and members of the LGBTQ Plus Network, and you would probably argue to everybody. But Pride Month has been going on, of course, for quite a while, and New Bedford is not left out because you've got stuff going on over at Buntwood Park.
We do. We have Pride celebration at Buntwood Park from 12 to 5 today, right near the Warming House. I think it's the Council on Aging now. And that's just one of many. So AHA Pride is on the 12th. Taunton Pride is on the 14th at Hopewell Park. Westport is having a Pride on the 21st. Fairhaven's having a Pride on the 22nd, and Fall River already had their Pride. So it's crazy these days. I'm running around like a chicken with his head cut off.
So what happens at this Pride event today at Buntwood Park?
It's a wonderful festival. A lot of times Pride parades, like in Boston, in Providence, there have been parades. Here we have sort of a festival where we have performers, New Bedford Rude Boys. You're familiar with
them? Oh, yes.
Yeah, yep. They're the headline for this today. But all different types of entertainment, from tribal dancing to bluegrass to drag shows to everything. You know, it's just a real mix of entertainment. And then there's a lot of organizations, healthcare, religious. We have a lot of religious organizations that are supportive. They're there to provide information. And then vendors, people selling T-shirts and coffee mugs and dog treats and all sorts of things. You name it, it's there. So about 100 vendors, entertainment through the entire time. One of the things that I really like about our Pride is that we are focused on our older adults, and we have a tent for older folks. We call them our elders, and we want to value them. But we also realize that walking around Buntwood Park for 4 or 5 hours is a little bit taxing for some. So we have chairs and tables and food and games and sitting close to the entertainment so they can relax and enjoy it.
Now, you talk about religious groups because I think there is a thought out there that a lot of the more traditional religious groups are hostile to the LGBTQ plus community, but yes, that's not always the case.
No. In fact, we showed a film a year and a half ago about Bayard Rustin. It was called Rustin. Coleman Domingo was starring in it, and he was up for Emmy, if I'm not mistaken, or whatever. He was nominated. Great film. We had 11 religious organizations that supported it. So for me, it's important to for a few reasons. One, the spiritual. A lot of times gay people, LGBT folks, will throw the baby out with the bathwater. They've had bad experiences in different religious institutions. And for them to find a home where they are welcome, affirmed, and spiritual is just a wonderful gift. On the other side, it's just important for us. A lot of times the arguments against LGBT stuff are all based on religion. And when we say, okay, you disagree, here's all the religious who agree. Let's move forward. And there's not typically a lot more to say after that. I mean, what do you say after the religion is taken off the table?
Right. Love thy neighbor as thyself is really the central theme of...
Yeah, Jesus was pretty amazing when he was asked to sum up the law and the prophets. He talked about loving the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. But then he said, love your neighbor as yourself. And the guy was a lawyer, Paul.
Oh, really?
I know. Yeah, the guy was a little snarky, I thought. And
a snarky lawyer?
I know, go figure. Oh, yeah, and a slippery, maybe slippery too. But anyway, he says to him, all right, who's my neighbor? Like, all right, I want it qualified. And Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan. which the Samaritans were the despised people of the region. They were looked down on. They were not seen as good Jews. They weren't clean, you know, blah, blah, blah. So the priest walks by the beaten up man on the road, you know, the holy man, doesn't touch him. Another person walks by, doesn't touch him. It's the Samaritan, the despised person, who takes care of him, brings him to the inn, you know, fixes his wounds. Jesus tells a story, leaves money for him, whatever. And he says, who is the good neighbor? And the guy, you know, just kind of like shuffles away. So, I mean, Jesus was pretty straightforward about people who are marginalized. And I think, and here we are preaching on a Saturday morning, but I see the Gospels as much more Jesus welcoming people to God, especially people who the religious organization of their day told them they couldn't. Right. So the prostitutes, the tax collectors, the people that were marginalized in their society. Well, and Jesus welcomes them.
I can remember, you know, in church, one of my favorite hymns, we used to sing it every week. Whatsoever you do to the least of my brother, that you do unto me.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, that's not really followed by a lot of zealots out there, you know?
No, I belong to a Quaker meeting, and a lot of the Quakers believe in faith and action, and it's that intersection. So what you do is more important than what you say. So, for instance, we'll have protesters today yelling in the microphone a bullhorn about the love of Jesus, which I just kind of don't understand that.
Right.
I mean, Jesus would be there. He would give water. He'd wash people's feet. He would do. And I'm kind of wondering if I should go to their church and with a bullhorn and, you know, return the favor, but, you know, we don't do that.
All right, if you have any questions for Andrew, 508-996-0500. What does Pride Month mean to you? Because I'll have people say, you know, I got nothing against gay people. I'm all for gay people and everything like that. But why is that? They're always, like, putting it in my face. Gay this, gay that, gay that, gay this. Like, why don't you just, like, you know, I just got out of my face. Like, what do you say about that?
Great question. Well, Pride started in the Stonewall Riot in 1969. And that was because the police were raiding the bar, and it was the first time that gays fought back, gays, lesbians, trans folks.
Why were they raiding the bar?
You know, I have folks, I know older people who remember when the bars were raided, and that was Providence was known as incredibly rough, like they beat the tar out of you. Your name would be in the paper, you would lose your job, you'd lose your housing, you know, something like sexual indecency. So the bars, a lot of times they were paid off, but a light would go on in one of the bars, my friends was telling me, and everyone would scatter or they'd dance with the opposite sex. You know, others, they'd, you know, be climbing out the bathroom windows.
So they were targeting gay people.
They were targeting gay people, mm-hmm. and arresting them. And so that was their generation. And Stonewall was the first time that the gays stood up and said no. So that's June of 69. From that came Pride. And, you know, my generation, I'm not as old as that, but I'm a little bit old. I'm older than most. And, you know, I remember guys being beaten up outside the bar and the police never coming. You know, I mean, that was our reality. So, you know, older folks remember the police raiding the bars. I remember, you know, police disinterest. And now we have a liaison with the police and we're, you know, they're great. So, good progress. And that's, I think for us, you know, first of all, the First Amendment has the right of assembly, which is for us all, you know, religion, speech, press, petition, and assembly. So we have the right to get together. But it's really important for our own community to show strength, to look at resources, and to come together. I always say that gay kids are like a giraffe born in a dairy barn. You know, you're typically, if you're born in a Jewish family or an African-American family, or for me, like a Yankee family, you know, you learn skills and you learn culture and you learn history, you learn coping mechanisms. And when you're a gay kid, you're born into a straight family and, like, you know, the giraffe in the dairy barn. So how do you find your own people? How do you find your own culture? How do you find your own supports? I would love to see people at Pride, especially the people who have come for the first time, and they're a little timid because they're convinced that their face is going to be on the front page of the newspaper. That's always everyone's fear. But then their eyes are so wide, like, wow, look at all these people. Look at all these resources. Look at all this fun, you know? And it's just, for them, it's like a you can see them blossom. You know, mm-hmm. It's like a flower in the sun, you know? And that makes it worthwhile for us.
All right. Any questions for Andrew? 508-996-0500. We'll be here till 9 o'clock. Then Ken Pittman takes over from 9 to noon right here at WBSM. We're going to ask Andrew about that T-shirt case that I was talking about during the first hour. Also ask him some of the hot-button issues, for example, having to do with people who are born a male competing in female sports, puberty blockers, and some of these other transgender issues that are hot-button issues in the news, and other issues such as housing and the disproportionate amount of gay and lesbian youth who seem to have more suicidal ideation, which is a real tragedy, which is something that we should all be looking at and, of course, addressing. And, of course, discrimination at housing, discrimination on the job, all those kinds of things that I think we can all agree with. We'll ask them all that in just a moment. You're listening to the Paul Santos Show here at WBSM. We'll be right back.
It can be whatever you want it to be. Let's just put it that way.
That's Diana Ross.
Yeah, well,
I don't, Diana Ross isn't gay or lesbian.
I think the song is great. And it's a good anthem for the day, don't you think?
Yeah, YMCA, too. That's another
one.
There
we go.
All right. It's Paul Santos with Andrew Pollack here on WBSM talking about Pride Month and the event going on today at Buttonwood Park, going from 11 to 4, you said?
12 to 5.
12 to 5. Okay, that's what I get for really being fumbling around with wires and fumbling around with a board and everything like that. So 12 to 5 today at Buttonwood Park. So let's see. During the first hour, we're talking about the Middleborough T-shirt case. A kid came to school with a T-shirt that said there are only two genders. It's a First Amendment type case. I am generally on the side of First Amendment. However, the court said that in a school setting, if a statement on a shirt or something like that could potentially be disruptive or demeaning to any of the students in the class, then the school can, under their very strict dress code, limit certain types of statements. So I feel that when I first looked at it, I thought, I don't care what kind of T-shirt he has. You know what I mean? Like, he should have the right to say that if he wants to. But then when I looked more closely in the school setting, you're talking about a different situation. You're talking about dress codes. You're talking about having the class in a comfortable setting for everybody so that everybody can be learn how to read, how to learn how to write. And it really shouldn't be a setting for this kind of commentary. What do you say?
I completely agree. I think he can wear the T-shirt wherever he wants to, but if it's a disruption for his school, if it's a target, they have the right to say no. And I wonder if, you know, you had a T-shirt that said, you know, Jesus is a lie, or, you know, something that's really offensive. Yeah, I would support that for him, you know, for them to say take the shirt off or go home and change. I wonder what his motivation was.
You know, I think he was being a wise guy, you know.
Yeah.
But sometimes speech can be used in that fashion.
I've been known to use wisecracks on a frequent basis, but go ahead.
Well, anyway, Justice Alito, who took the position that the Supreme Court should have taken up the case, what happened was the Supreme Court didn't take the case, so the lower court ruling stood, which was that the school could prohibit that T-shirt. But he said that they should have taken the case at the Supreme Court level. And then he says the following. What do you think about this? Feeling upset. Classmates felt the speech upsetting. Feeling upset is an unavoidable part of living in our often disputatious society. And mere desire to avoid the discomfort and unpleasantness that always accompany an unpopular viewpoint is really no reason to stop the speech. Have we become like too soft? Any little thing we get upset? What about that thought process? Should we be more resilient when somebody says something we don't like?
No, I believe in discourse. I believe in, I've met with the Dartmouth Republican Town Committee and talked to them about LGBT things. I think discourse is important. But I also think of the motivation behind it. Am I there to lecture them? Am I there to prove a point? Or am I there to say, let's move together as one and let's do this cooperatively? I'm here to learn. I'm here to move forward. So I guess it's always the posture that I'm looking at. You know, I would say the important thing is the motivation. And I'm concerned, you know, in Germany, good example, after World War II, they took away all Nazi symbols. You can't have a swastika. You can't wear, I walked over Hitler's grave, and it's a parking lot. There's no memorial. There's no nothing. And I think they were really smart to do that.
It was so horrific. What happened was so horrific off the chart that it was reasonable to do that.
Right. Now, I would advocate for things like the Confederate flag, which symbolizes horrific 400 years of slavery in the United States. And if you look at what they did to the African Americans, it was brutal for hundreds of years. So I think what they should have done during Reconstruction was to say the same thing that the Nazis, they did with the Nazis, is that these symbols, these heroes, and whatever, gone. So, you know, I agree that freedom of speech, thank God for it, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom of petition, freedom of assembly. It's a really unique constitution, and you think about, you know, when they did it 250 years ago, whatever it was brilliant. But I also think that there are guidelines in a society and that we work within those guidelines to keep, you know, we don't yell fire in a theater type of thing.
So. Right, exactly. In fact, the Supreme Court, there's a famous case, clear and present danger. You know, you can't get up and rile up a crowd into having a riot, you know, or rile up a crowd into doing harm or doing violence. But as far as, and by the way, saying fire in a theater isn't an opinion, right? The protected speech is what's my opinion. So that some yelling fire in a theater is an opinion. It's trying to get somebody trampled. So it's somebody's opinion that's protected. So, you know, if somebody has a particular opinion that's unpopular, they should be able to say it, but in the public square, not necessarily in the middle of math class.
Right. Right. Oh, what is appropriate? When is it appropriate? School, you know, again, if he was wearing a different type of T-shirt, you know, that was offensive, I would support, you know, having him take it off.
Yeah, absolutely, Ryan. You make that point, and I made that point, too, before you got here, that, you know, the First Amendment and freedom of speech is always easy when you agree with the speaker. But when you disagree with the speaker, that's when you really test it. That's when you really test it, whether you believe it or not. So you're absolutely right. If somebody had a T-shirt that said, you know, there is no Jesus or Jesus is a fraud or something like that, and then another kid in that class who was of a very strong religious background felt distracted and that this was going to not create the climate for learning, that would be the same thing as this.
Right.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Be so the same thing as this.
Take the shirt off. Send him home.
Right.
You know?
I
mean, it's just, I guess, again, motivation. What is the motivation for it?
Right,
is it to prove a point? Is it to make a statement? Great. Make your statement at your own time. Prove your point at your own time. But if you're in math class, do math.
Well, you know, you actually suggested a guest for me a while back, and the person's name is Victoria Wolf.
Right.
And, you know, when she was sitting here, she was like, I know you're going to call me Virginia Woolf at some point during this thing, right? So, of course, I did, you know, and it just happens because it's so close to the movie and everything, right? But anyway, Victoria Woolf, she's the trans woman who lived in Texas and decided to move to Massachusetts because she thought Massachusetts was a much more gay and lesbian friendly state, which it is actually, was ranked in the top two or three states in the country for being, you know, open and friendly, and which is, I think, something to be proud of, that, you know, we have a big umbrella here in Massachusetts, and, you know, we're going to be supportive of everybody of every background. I think that's a good thing. But anyway, I asked her the question about athletes, because before she transitioned to become a woman, she was born a male, transitioned to become a female. And I asked her about athletes who were born a male competing in women's sports. And I actually asked her about Caitlyn Jenner, because Caitlyn Jenner, probably the most well-known trans person, because he was a decathlon winner and everything else, he took the position that, you know, there's such an advantage being born with the male hormones that if you put somebody that's born a male into the female sport, it creates such a big advantage that it really shouldn't be done. Victoria took the position that, well, it's a case-by-case basis, because somebody like him would be a lousy candidate because he's a decathlon athlete, right? Victoria herself said, hey, you know, I played football, so I wouldn't be a good candidate. But you might have a boy, somebody was born a boy that's now a girl who's a very, you know, not very big, not very strong, is not very heavy, and would be able to compete without dominating the sport. But again, I just find it hard to be able to take each case on a case-by-case basis and make the thing work. You know what I mean? It seems like it would be difficult. I know it doesn't happen all that often, but even though it doesn't happen all that often, it still seems wrong to me. What say you?
I would agree with Victoria. I would say it's between the coach, the child, the parents.
So case-by-case basis.
Why not? You know, we believe in freedoms, right? And when I was in high school back in the day with, you know.
What year was that?
18.
No, it's probably, I bet you it was after me.
All right. We'll figure that out later. But there was a kid from New Zealand, and in New Zealand, they played field hockey. The boys played field hockey. In the United States, girls play field hockey. He wanted to play field hockey, and you help me with this. Is it Title IX?
Yeah.
That says if there is not, if a child wants to play a sport and there is no sport in that for like boys field hockey, he gets to play on the girls'
team. And you know, not to interrupt you, that happened when I was in high school. There were a
you
couple of
field
kids.
Hockey?
That, no. I don't know if I would have made the girls' team. I was such a terrible athlete. But
well,
no.
You look good in the skirt. That's it.
No, seriously, there were a couple of boys that I think, you know what it was? I think they were kind of being wise guys. They were like, well, you know, the girls want to do this. Well, I'm a boy and I want to play field hockey. So then they played, you know, and they had to let them play.
And they probably got their asses whipped, you know.
I don't know. I mean,
but anyway, but still, in that case, and that still happens today. So you let the boys play women's sports now. Right?
Yes.
So that you're saying that the trans person who's taking hormones or whatever they're doing, or, you know, they're working towards their transition, can't?
Well, I think it's a little bit different in the sense that if the school doesn't have that sport, but a lot of the sports, there are both. There are like boys basketball teams, girls basketball teams, boys swimming teams, girls swimming teams. So the argument would be, well, if you're born a male, you should compete with the male swimmers.
I see.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. To me, it gives such a big advantage. Like, you know, I don't have a daughter. I do have a granddaughter, though. And people tell me all the time, people that are very liberal, people that are, you know, this seems to cross the conservatives and the liberals. I think it's like 80 to 90% are like, you know what? Males are just born with such a biological advantage that although we want to be fair to the trans kid, we also want to be fair to the girls that were born female that might have the floor wiped by the athlete.
It's a tough issue. And when I talk with trans folks, the issues around safety, employment, healthcare, violence,
more important.
I know maybe 100 trans folks, and I know one very, very good runner. He was a good runner as a man. She's a great runner as a woman, and she's in her 50s. But she can compete really well. And, you know, I look at it and I scratch my head myself, and I'm president of the LGBT network. But I look at it as case-by-case basis. But the issues that are facing the trans community, which is 1% of our population, the laws that are going into effect that are punitive and basically just mean, make it difficult for them to live. And playing on a sports team is probably, you know, number 10 on the list of issues that they're worried about.
Right. But you know, the only thing I would say to that, and I've heard that before, and I understand that, but, you know, and I've heard, you know, when I've talked to, you know, folks that are gay, lesbian, or even people that are just very progressive, you know, they will say exactly what you said. But I would say, well, even if it only happens every once in a while, if it's still ridiculous that once in a while, it still should be like, hey, you know, we're not going to allow this. You know what I mean? Like, even if it's very rare, you know, it doesn't mean that it's not correct. You know what I mean?
Right. But why the focus?
Well, I guess. I mean, people tend to focus on things that kind of, you know, jump out at them, you know.
Or they're put forward to them.
Yeah. All right, 508-996-0500. If you'd like to ask Andrew any questions along these lines, we're trying to ask the questions that I think our audience would ask you. The other one would be puberty blockers. You know, let's say you have a 10-year-old kid and the kid is struggling with their sexual identity.
Gender identity.
Or gender identity. And they feel that they are in the wrong body, that maybe they are trans or they really belong in the other body. And the decision is made to stop the natural process of puberty. Now, the process of puberty, to me, is a natural, happened to you, happened to me, you're gay, I'm still straight.
I'm still waiting.
No, but whether you're gay or straight, it happens to you, it happens to me, it happens to everybody. And so you're interfering with the natural process, which is your right to do. But as a 10-year-old or an 11-year-old, and I know that it doesn't happen like, you know, the president says something like, one day you go to school, a boy, you come back a girl. I mean, obviously,
they're
that's
doing
not
sex
true.
Changes in the cafeteria, Paul.
Yeah, right. You know, take the T-shirt off, but we'll send you home the other sex. No, but I think the issue is that can someone that young make a decision that is that important and that big? You know what I mean? And I understand that it doesn't happen like a snap of a finger. And I explain to people who are more concerned, that are sort of to the right of me, hey, You're talking about parents involved. You're talking about doctors involved. You're talking about, you know, medical providers involved. A big, real big litany of things has to happen before you even get to that point. But somebody that's underage, in other words, you're 18, you're 21, I think you can make those kind of decisions. But is there an argument to be made that somebody who's that young can make a decision that is that lasting? What do you think?
Again, case by case basis. I like your setup because it is with a therapist, it is with a doctor, it is with the parents, it is with the child. And what I hear is that, you know, sometimes kids can go through phases. God knows I went through some dark phases. And just joking. It's persistent, consistent, and insistent.
Well, that's what Victoria said.
Right. So yeah. The kid isn't just saying today, I want to be a different child. I want to be a girl. I want to be a boy, whatever.
And everybody runs to the doctor and you start with the puberty blockers, right?
Yeah, snip, snip. But the puberty blockers are used in other medical situations. So they seem to be safe and they seem, I'm not as familiar because I don't have a kid who's going through this. But right. What I understand is that they're used in other situations without any difficulty.
What are the situations? Do you know off the top of your head?
Medical situations where, you know, I can research that for you.
Right.
But my understanding is that there's certain medical conditions that they'll use puberty blockers mm-hmm. for whatever reason in a period of time. And there seems to be no negative effect.
It does seem like that whole persistent, consistent, and what was the other one?
Insistent.
And insistent. You know, when Victoria was here, Victoria said that, you know, this would go on for a long time. Like in her case, she can remember when she was a kid, and I don't think she had puberty blockers. This is something that happened later on, but she pointed out how, you know, it just stayed with her 24/7 for years.
Right.
That she had this thought. It wasn't just like, you know, because, you know, kids are going through, you know, they're going through puberty and they're going through adolescence, and it's such a difficult time for everybody, regardless of what their sexuality is. And I can't imagine what it was like for somebody like yourself. Okay, you were already struggling then, and you even forced yourself to live a heterosexual life at one time, you told me. You got married and everything, right?
No, I didn't get married. I didn't.
you didn't make...
No, I didn't.
You didn't make that mistake?
I did date women, yeah, sure. One is now a doctor. I could have been kept.
Oh, you could have... You could have
been in the junior league, Paul.
You could have kept that one.
Yeah, no, it's... What I view it as, and I think this is helpful for people to see, is when did you know you're left or right-handed?
Yeah, that's the same thing Victoria said. I never really knew. I just started using my right hand.
Yeah, I think even with small children, they start using their dominant hand early.
And so that's what happens, gay, lesbian people, like you just have these feelings that won't go away, right?
I was watching the Tarzan movies getting, you know, like, wow, look at this. And I didn't realize, like, you know, my friends are watching the...
you weren't looking at Jane?
I know. I was like...
No,
what
but
was
it,
the monkey's name?
anyway, I don't remember.
Cheetah or whatever. Anyway, but the, you know it, you understand it, it feels normal and natural. I could write with my left hand. It's not pretty, but I could do it. So I think there are people who are bisexual, and there are people who may, depending on the situation, be attracted to the different person, maybe mm-hmm. of the same gender, maybe of a different gender. You know, I think sexuality is a lot more fluid than what people will say. So, you know, and Kinsey says that 10%, but then he talks about other people having sexual experiences with the same gender, which, again, is not as uncommon as people think. So, you know, I think, you know, it's a very fluid sexuality. But with kids, you know, the issue, I think, is allowing the freedom of the parent to make the decision with the child and the doctor and the therapist and the whole line of people.
Right. I think the argument goes that, well, they don't want to interrupt you. The argument goes that, well, the kid, it may be persistent and everything, but maybe, suppose the parent's wrong in the decision that they make. The kid really never had a chance to decide themselves at a 10-year-old. You know what I mean? So if they change their mind, that could be, you know.
I think it's
probably more complicated than people think it is.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a complicated situation. And to legislate like they're doing in Texas where you can't bring your child to gender-affirming care. So if your child says, I'm confused. I'm depressed. I hate school. I hate life. And, you know, you whittle it down and they're having issues around their gender identity. It's illegal to take the child to therapy. It's illegal to take the child to a doctor. It's illegal. You could have your child taken away. And, you know, these are the type of laws that we find incredibly offensive. And as far as freedoms in the United States, who are you to tell me what to do with my child or what not to do with my child?
All right. What do you think about that, WBSM audience? 508-996-0500. Back after this. CA, you picked I'm Coming Out. Good thing this is the last segment. I don't know what the next song's going to be. We're talking to Andrew Pollack of the LGBTQ Plus Network, and we want to go to the phone lines and see if we have any interesting calls, and I think we have one here. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Paul. How you doing?
Yeah, good. How are you today?
Good. Last comment by your guest was intriguing to me.
Okay.
I think no matter how different we are, we could agree on something. I'm not sure if he's going to interpret it the same way, but he made the comment that who are you to tell me what to do with my child or children?
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with that 100%, but I don't believe that everyone thinks that because of the what's being taught in our schools, and that the pride and LGBTQ agenda is being forced down students who the parents don't want it.
All right, so your point
they
is that...
I don't think that that's a public school... That's not the job of any government entity.
So the kid with the T-shirt, the kid with the T-shirt, there are only two genders... Do you think that he was trying to push back at what you say would be the school's opinion, and that he wanted to push back that the school was forcing their opinion on him?
I don't know. I don't know the kid. I don't know the parents. Mm-hmm. I don't know what his agenda is. What I do know is if I had children in school, elementary, middle, high school, as a parent, which I don't, I would be... directly involved in what's being taught.
Well,
and there should be some options for parents to have their children opt out of certain topics, which I personally don't believe it's the government's job to raise my child. It's my job.
Right. Well, you know, before I get my guest comment, right, my wife taught for, I don't know, 35 years, and she only retired a couple of years ago. And she taught all the different grades, fifth grade, fourth grade, second grade. I don't think this ever came up. My wife didn't push any LGBTQ plus agenda. My younger son is a phys ed teacher, and he's not pushing any agenda like that.
I can even give an example going back to, not when we were in school, but sometime after. I know my children and your children got sex education.
Mm-hmm. Well,
thought it was a good idea for the government of all entities to teach the children about sex?
Well, I think, it's interesting because one of my sons, he's a phys ed teacher, and actually he really didn't want to be the health teacher too, but apparently the phys ed and the health go together. So he teaches the health class. And of course, part of health, you know, part of our bodies is, you know, we see, we shouldn't do drugs. Drugs can do harm to you. We shouldn't take alcohol.
Yeah,
we shouldn't do all this stuff.
No.
But teaching the function of the body is biology, right? So why wouldn't we teach how the body, how we reproduce, and how our body functions?
That's my point. Like you agree that the government is supposed to teach those things. I don't.
Okay, let me hear our guest.
He just made the statement. Who are you to tell me?
But I think that if you have a particular opinion about, you know, gender and gay and this and that, that could
be
disruptive of the class.
The government's job to teach that to my children.
But I don't know that it really is that. That might be. That might be the information that is coming from certain media outlets, but I can only ask my wife and my son and people that teach at the school. And, you know, I don't know. But let's get the comment from the guest. Stay on the line because you brought a lot of stuff up. Go ahead.
Good morning. I really appreciate your call. Thank you for that. I would agree with Paul. A good buddy of mine is a history teacher in Hanover High School. Great guy. And I talked to him about what he's teaching in his class, and he does touch on historical points of the United States. And in the later part of the lesson plan, they do touch, they don't go much into it, but they do mention Stonewall. And for a significant 10% of the population, that was a big event for us. Now, I'm not sure that that's pushing the agenda, but it is just a historical marker. But I'm not really sure where other opportunities for kids in schools, or there's gay-straight alliances in many of these schools, which kids self-identify and they can go to if they want to, but the kids don't have to. And I can imagine, like, for sex education, my understanding is that if parents feel that their child doesn't want to be there or that they don't want their kid to hear this stuff, they can get the kid out. The kid can sit out of the class. And that's the same thing with books in the library. You know, if Johnny's mommy says he can't take the book out, Johnny can't take the book out. But the difference that I have a problem with is saying that no one can take the book out. Does that make sense to you?
I can understand where you're coming from. However, I still stand by what you said, and I wanted to point out that I think you and I agreed on one statement. Who are you to tell me what my child has to be taught?
Right, I agree with that completely. And I think there are, there's Christian schools that they can send their kid to. There's charter schools that they, if they feel so strongly about a certain issue, which is interesting to me why there is such a reaction to it.
Yeah,
because charter schools and Christian schools cost money.
Well,
and the government is the school department, the public schools. I just don't think that it's the government's job.
You don't think it's...
There should be parental rights.
Sure, there are parental rights. Again, if you don't want your child to take...
Well, they're getting very limited now. They're getting very limited.
I don't know, my friend. It seems like in other parts of the country, it's getting more restrictive.
But let me ask you this. I brought an issue out. I don't know if you're listening that morning. This was quite a while back when I was filling in about how Fall River in the health class had the item taught that you would use the Narcan. You know, and some parents are like, I don't want my kids being taught how to use Narcan. You know, what's this? Because of the drug addicts and all this. And so you could opt out of it. But then I'm thinking to myself, why would you want to opt out of that? I want my kid to have knowledge. I want my kid to know about Narcan. And I want my kid to know how biology functions. Like, this is how, I mean, I know it's a touchy subject, but this is how we reproduce. We reproduce by having sex, and there are STDs, and this is how you protect yourself. I want my kid to know all that. Why wouldn't I want my kid to know all that?
But if you don't want your kids to know that,
why wouldn't you teach it to your child?
Well, we teach that.
Why wouldn't you control the agenda as opposed to?
Well,
and I'm going to bring this, and I'm going to keep saying this.
Mm-hmm.
The government.
Well, the government is us. It's we the people that you know. So if you go to the
sometimes I don't feel represented.
That's true. Cause there's too much money in government. But anyway, I just felt that, you know. I remember it was a controversy.
Personal question, but if you were someone I didn't know, maybe I would say, did you sit down and teach your child about sex?
Yeah, I did, but, you know, when he went to school.
Why would the government?
Well,
who in the government is more?
Well, but I taught him how to read, too. We went through the alphabet, and we went through that, but then he still went to school and was taught, you know, how to read, how to write.
Fine-tune it.
How about biology, right? Shouldn't they learn biology, and isn't sex and reproduction part of biology?
Yep, absolutely.
So I think the more knowledge the kid has, the better. You know what I mean? I don't subscribe to the fact that...
I'm not arguing that, and another point that we agree on.
All right.
I'm just telling you, I don't want the government teaching it.
Okay, all right.
To my child.
All right. Okay. Hey, thanks for the usual good call.
Okay.
All right, have a great weekend. Hello, you're next on WBSM.
Good morning, Paul. How are you today?
Good. Try to be concise because I'm up against a commercial break. You have a question for our guest?
Well, actually, what I'd like to say is all the governments of the whole world run by the dragon, Satan. They don't subject themselves to God, who created everything.
All right, but doesn't God preach and Jesus preach, love thy neighbor as thyself?
Yes.
Doesn't God also preach that whatever you do to the least of my people, that you do unto me?
Absolutely.
So Jesus was all about the downtrodden, the down and out, the marginalized, wasn't he?
What he said, the church that he's building where the gates of hell will not prevail, is that follow me, deny yourself, pick up your cross, and lose your life.
All right, let me get the guest. I'm up against the break. I appreciate the call. Let's get our guest comment. Thank you.
You know, brother, I grew up in a evangelical background, and I was an intervarsity staff worker on campus at University of Maine. So I'm really attuned to what you're saying. One of the things I think of is the parable that Jesus talks about the king who throws a feast, a wedding feast. You remember this? And all the wealthy folks say, I can't come. I have a new field. I have a new wife. I have a new cow. I think those are the things. There's a cute children's song we used to sing about it. And what does he do? He says, well, he has all this food. He has the whole banquet prepared. Well, what does he do? He goes out to the streets, to the folks that are the poor, the cripples, the ones that were discarded from that society, and brings them into the feast. And he says, such is the kingdom of heaven. And I guess that's my perspective rather than, I mean, I can only control myself and I can't do that very well. But how do I interact with my brothers and sisters, even if I disagree with them?
All right, back in a moment here on WBSM. And boy, I missed the party last night, I guess. But anyway.
Well, tonight there's an after Pride party at the Gallery Bar.
So oh, is that right?
It's a block party. It should be a lot of fun. So
all right.
That's 5 to 1 a.m.
All the way to 1 o'clock in the morning?
I'll see you then.
No, well, actually, I'm going to a show for a friend of mine that, as a matter of fact, a guy's name is Felix the Funky Cat. Do you know
Felix the Funky Cat?
That sounds good. Yeah, he's performing in Fairhaven, so we're going to go out to see him. He was on my last show, as a matter of fact, my last TV show. And speaking about my TV show, the Paul Santos Live Show, isn't that a hilarious show? Isn't that a great show?
It's hysterical, Paul. I enjoy it a great deal. We've been doing it for probably like 6 years now.
Yeah, he's been on a number of times. He always comes on during Pride Month, and he's going to be on. Actually, the next taping of the show is this Monday night, 7 o'clock at Mikey B's. But I got to tell you, we talk about a lot of serious stuff here. And it's good to talk about serious stuff. But on that show, we really don't do any politics at all. So it's all about having laughs.
I think I brought my Easy Bake Oven one time.
Well, I asked Andrew when he knew he was gay. And he said, I don't know. But all I know is I really like that Easy Bake Oven.
Yeah.
And you still
yeah.
have it too, right?
Of course I do.
Come on, man.
Cooking with a light bulb. I'm baking so, right now.
You're really big on the G.I. Joe, huh?
No, I was a farm kid and, I was running around outside a lot, but I really wanted to cook. And I saw this on TV and I thought, this is the perfect solution. And my father, who was, kind of a farmer and, he's like, no, son of mine is getting an Easy Bake Oven. And I was just, like, oh. So that Christmas morning, I guess my mother prevailed and there it was. And I was thrilled.
Well, we're out of time. These hours go by so quickly, especially with all the commercial breaks, but that's what pays for the show. So we have to have those. But we appreciate you coming by. I'm glad you had a chance to come on with Brian, and we wish you a lot of success today at the Pride event. Tell the folks again, Buttonwood
Very
Park.
Very good. Buttonwood Park, 12 to 5.
All right. Andrew
we'll
Pollard,
see you there.
President of the LGBTQ+ Network. I hope you found it an informative show this morning. You may not agree with a lot of what he